If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Erin Evis is a degree-qualified naturopath and medical herbalist, wife of one and mother of three. With a passion for children's health and well-being, she splits her time between her clinics in Fielding and Whanganui when she isn't homeschooling her kids. Erin has been heavily involved in breastfeeding support circles since attending her first La Leche League meeting when pregnant with her eldest child. With a full 10 years of breastfeeding experience under her belt, a large percentage of that being spent tandem feeding, she has plenty to say about the benefits and importance of breast milk for children's health and development. Erin is with us. Thanks for coming on Reality Check Radio, Erin. Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Here's a question. What do you think in this day and age now, what is the status of breastfeeding?
Good question. I think it's one of those things that is, it's actually New Zealand's not too bad, I think, kind of compared to some other countries, just from my personal experience. Mm-hmm. There's reasonable support here, but I think that there is a lot of, I think a lot of women experience difficulties in terms of the whole fed is best thing. There's kind of this idea that breast milk and formula are pretty much the same. You know, as long as baby's got a full tummy, then everything is well and all is good. So I see a lot of women kind of getting pressure, and it's often well-intentioned. Like, it's not, you know, it's not coming from a bad place. But the second they encounter any kind of issues or any kind of struggles, they just get told, oh, just pop baby on a bottle, you know, get yourself some good sleep, get your, you know, make it easier on yourself, then someone else can feed them. And it's kind of this, it becomes really hard for a lot of women to continue as soon as they come across issues, which a lot of women do, because breastfeeding is not something that necessarily comes easy to a lot of people.
You'd think it would, though.
You think it would.
By the evolutionary track of it, for yes. How long, you know, millions of years, mammals have been around kind of doing this, you'd think yeah. It would be fully wired in, baked in.
You would. And I think it gets to that point, but I think what people forget is that a newborn baby is brand new to this world. You know, they've spent all of their life so far has been spent in utero. They don't have that, you know, they've never had to use their mouths before. They've never had to you know, consume food before or to breastfeed before. And often, especially for a new mother, they've never had to breastfeed before and use their breasts in that way before. So both of them are having to do a lot of learning, and it doesn't, you know, for some women it does. For some women, they just chuck their baby on the, you know, on the breast and off they go and everything as well. But for a lot of women, it's a real learning curve. And there's a lot of sort of, I guess you could call them urban legends, myth, you know, sort of mythology around feeding in those early weeks, especially, that comes into play as well. And that can be a bit of a roadblock for a lot of women.
Yeah.
For example, there's often a period after that sort of first few days, like there's colostrum is the first, the early milk that comes in over the first yep. sort of 48 hours. And then it turns into the real milk. But a lot of women will go, oh my gosh, my milk's not in yet. And then they become stressed, and stress counteracts oxytocin, which is needed for breast milk production and release. And so that stress can kind of play a bit of a role there, and suddenly things become a little bit harder. If they've had an instrumental delivery or a C-section delivery, often milk can be a little bit delayed by a day or two.
Is that because of the sort of natural mechanisms of the body, the way that
yeah.
it's designed to cascade in one function yeah. after another in a particular order?
Yeah, it's all to do with the hormones and the way that they kind of progress things. So the way to increase oxytocin production is to have a lot of skin-to-skin time, mother and to baby, skin-to-skin,
okay. yep.
And it'll increase the oxytocin. But if someone's had synthetic oxytocin during delivery, which is often the case, that can sort of slow that oxytocin and sort of interfere with that cascade. So there's sort of things that can happen. And then they'll think, oh, my gosh, I'm not making enough milk, and they become stressed, and then they'll be told, oh, just give baby a bottle. You know, baby's hungry. They just
yep.
need a bottle.
Yep.
But the problem is that breast milk production is supply and demand. So it's all to do with when you remove breast milk from the breast, more milk will then be made. It sends a signal to the body that we need to make more milk, and we need to top
right.
up and refill.
Yeah.
So every time you're introducing a bottle to a baby, yes, the baby will be fed, but the mother's breasts are not getting that signal. The brain is not getting that signal that we need to make more milk. And so slowly the sort of this vicious cycle is created where there's less milk being produced and more bottles coming in, and suddenly mum really is not going to be making much milk because those first few weeks are so vital for establishing that routine. So the other thing that comes in as well I see a lot of is what we call cluster feeding. So it's the first few weeks baby's kind of the milk's in, and then suddenly baby seems really hungry and they just want to feed all day, usually all night actually. I want to be feeding all night. Mum cannot get a break. Yeah. And she's thinking, oh my gosh, well, this baby is starving and they're ravenous and they're crying all the time. And there must be something wrong with me. I'm not making enough milk. And suddenly there's that panic coming in that you know, oh my gosh, I must have to bring a bottle in because otherwise, you know, my baby's going to starve. And that's generally not the case. It's just that the baby is trying to establish mother's supply and sending all those signals to keep making more milk. And eventually, if you just kind of persist and you just keep feeding baby on demand and just keep going, even though it's really, really hard work. So this is where dads and partners and, you know, family yep. kind of come in, you know, feed them up.
Been there, done that, I got to say. Three times, actually.
Well, there you go. You know all about it. So keep mum fed and keep mum happy so she can keep going feeding baby. It will eventually settle out, and that's when those routines and those rhythms are really well established. But a lot of people don't kind of understand that. And so
yeah, I was thinking, why would that be as you're talking about that? I'm just trying to think back to our experience. I mean, the first one is over 30 years ago now, but, you know, I guess we were fully briefed or informed by the midwife fundamentally and the antenatal classes that we kind of attended with our, you know, peers and contemporaries at the time. Is that information not being imparted properly? What's happening, do you think?
I think it is from some. I think some warn about it. I feel like social media plays a really big role these days in where a lot of women access information. Like, even in the 10 years since I started with, you know, sort of involvement in La Leche League and other sort of, you know, peer-to-peer breastfeeding support networks, home birth groups and all those sorts of things. Back then we would get meetings and there were so many people there, and that was kind of the primary source of information for a lot of people besides their midwife and GP and maybe their mum or grandma or whoever. But these days so many women just jump straight to Facebook or Instagram or wherever, TikTok or whatever, and that's where they're getting a lot of their information.
And maybe take the first couple of items that pop up, right? And that's it.
And not all of it is correct. You know, I often see, you know, advice from women that just is not, and it's not that they're meaning to do harm or they're meaning to give good advice. It's just that they themselves might have been given good advice. And, you know, we've got generations who were raised on bottles, you know, when that kind of came in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and that was the really big thing.
Well, so, yeah, what drove that? That's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if you've done any research. Yeah. Again, it's like kind of follow the money, product to replace the the natural thing, and it's all about, I suppose, the formula market is gigantic, is it? I mean, I think New Zealand has made a lot of money on China just shipping milk powder for kids, right?
Yeah.
Boy, we're involved.
Absolute mountains
we're pushing
of it.
This stuff.
It's quite scary. Like, I mean, and it's not that formula is bad. You know, obviously we do need formula. It saves lives. For whatever reason, a child can't be breastfed and can't access donor milk, which is becoming a bigger thing donor here milk. Again, which is good. Okay. But, you know, so it's not that formula is necessarily bad, but breastfeeding really has got so many benefits that should be, you know, kind of the aim and the goal when we're talking about infant health and well-being.
What about, I'm curious about this too, because I think it's had an effect on the birth rate. Women, you know, being more career focused and, you know, having families during career path, but that's less time and less space to move if you're trying to breastfeed, well, a baby, but maybe, you know, beyond the baby stage as well. We can talk about that. That would be, you could see why women or families would want to kind of move as soon as possible to, you know, bottled milk or formula, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's It's massive. You know, I really don't think that we get anywhere near enough, parental leave from a lot of jobs and a lot of places. And a lot of women can't afford to be taking time off. You know, the cost of living is just so dire at the moment that people need to be working. And obviously you can't, most places are not going to be able to, you know, have a baby in a workplace.
Yeah. And
that's really hard for a lot of women. And that's a really big barrier. You know, they should have access to pumps and to breast pumps. So that is an option that a lot of women will take. But pumping is really hard work. And it's really hard to keep that supply up properly through pumping. So a lot of women will kind of give up after a while because it is just so hard. And it's just that extra burden on them, you know, juggling work and baby and household, you know, sort of needs and everything else. So I think that is a really big barrier for a lot of women.
Something more comprehensive in terms of facilitating the time to do that, because it's an investment, isn't it? I don't know, but you'll tell me. Do we know a breastfed child is ultimately a healthier child than a non-breast?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a fact, is it?
There is an absolute mountain of research showing long-term benefits. And I know that you'll get the ones who will say, oh, well, you can't tell the difference between, you know, someone who was formula fed and someone who was breastfed. And, you know, once they're adults, you can't really see the difference. And we say, well, there are sort of studies that show really significant long-term benefits to breastfeeding. It protects against, increased cognitive development is one sort of improvements in cognitive development long term, but also things like it's protective against allergies, asthma. There's protection.
Asthma is a big problem, right? So allergies.
Asthma is a huge problem here. Yeah,
we still scratch our heads. Why is it happening?
Oh, it's it's a whole other interview on its own.
No, but, I bet.
But largely, you know, we have a lot of information. So basically, what happens in terms of the immune system development is that when the baby is born and then the breast milk comes in, breast milk contains something called human milk oligosaccharides and glycoconjugates, which are known as HMOs and HMGs. Just think of them, they're like complex sugars basically, and what they do is they provide a substrate for particular microbial species, particularly Bifidobacterium longum infantis. We want to get really technical.
Don't ask me to write it down, but yeah, we heard that.
So basically, this particular Bifidobacterium should dominate an infant gut. That's we talk about the microbiome now. So the all the bugs that live in our gut and control a lot of our
and we've got to be clear. This young human has not had a gut full of this stuff before. This is the first time around, right?
Yeah. So this is what colonizes. So there's a lot of research done on the kind of the ways and waves of colonization of microbes in the infant gut. And so what they've found is that these human milk oligosaccharides basically mediate that relationship between the baby and these bifidobacteria. So they're kind of like food for the bacteria, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And what those bifidobacteria do, so infants with higher levels are more resistant to infection. It basically guides the immune system's development to tolerate foods and food antigens when solids are introduced.
So yeah, which is coming, at some point.
It also increases, so bifido reduces inflammation and suppresses that. It also induces immune tolerance to different things. So again, that's kind of the the allergy, where allergies come into it. It improves gut barrier function. It improves immune surveillance, so it protects against infection there. Reduces inflammation, and there's really interesting studies actually being done. So this was a 2023 study, which found that when you give antibiotics to a baby who is not breastfed, they have a 3 times higher rate, like higher chance of developing asthma than a baby who is given antibiotics but is being breastfed.
Join the dots.
Connect the dots there. So it's all to do with this microbiome development and how that works with these bifidobacterium largely, which protects against asthma. and lots and lots of other conditions. We've got research showing protection against, lower odds of obesity. There's some stuff around autism. There's some stuff around all sorts of different things, sort of long-term benefits. So, and also protection against autoimmune conditions as well for breastfed. So, again, it's not to say that a breastfed baby is not going to get these things and it's not going to happen to them. Obviously that can, and it's very complex. There's a lot of different mechanisms involved in the development of these different conditions, but there is research showing that there are, sort of benefits and there is protection that can happen from it.
The process of breastfeeding is kind of like an immune system training course, as well as being, getting nutrition and having a full belly and energy to get through the day. Just like nature intended. Okay. I'm interested in this term, full-term feeding. I've heard some people get a bit twisted up about, I saw someone the other day and she was feeding a kid and he looked to be 3, 4, or 5. That's ridiculous. I mean, I'm completely open-minded. We had varying durations of feeding for our kids, depending on kind of what they needed and wanted. And there comes kind of an obvious cutoff. But is that what full-term feeding is, a period of time? And I wonder what the average time is. Can you tell us?
Yeah, I can. So with the World Health Organization, as much stock as we may put in their recommendations.
We don't like hearing about them too much, but okay.
The recommendations from them anyway on breastfeeding are...
I'm sure the breastfeeding department is separate from the pandemic department.
Yeah, let's put it that way. So their breastfeeding research is good. And that suggests they recommend exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months and then continuing alongside solids for at least 2 years, if not longer. So the average age globally is between about 2.5 to 7 years. So that's kind of what I like using the term full-term feeding, because you'll often hear extended breastfeeding, and the implication from extended breastfeeding
is that you're making it last longer than it should for whatever reason.
And that's not really the case. Like if we look at our biological norms and if we look at different cultures around the world, it's between 2.5 to 7 years, and it always has been. Seven is kind of, occasionally you'll see some even going beyond that. By that point, it'll just be an occasional quick snack. Something's gone wrong, something's happening, maybe they're sick, maybe they're really tired, maybe they've had, there's just a bit of emotional regulation or something needed. It's kind of generally more where it's used in those later years. So it's not like they're feeding all day, every day on mother and, those strings need to be cut. It's a completely different picture from what it would be as a baby. So kind of that's sort of the upper limit that you will generally see. There's one theory around that they actually lose the ability to latch after a certain point when the milk teeth are falling out, which is interesting. We call them milk teeth.
So that's kind of a mechanism or something.
So it's not like they're going to be feeding that much longer, because they actually can't latch anymore, because the shape of the jaw has changed, the shape of the mouth has changed, and it's no longer actually physically
very clever.
Possible.
Very clever.
So it will end eventually, but so biologically, and it's just our culture that's a bit weird, kind of frowns on it. It's very normal in a lot of countries to be.
I wonder why we do frown on it. I wonder why it became awkward.
I don't know. I suspect it's just our hypersexualized culture that just associates breasts with sex instead of breasts with feeding babies.
Oh, so you think that's
I suspect that's a thing. Part of it. I suspect it's that, and also just that, again, that intense marketing of infant formula that came up, sort of 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it's a bit of a hangover from that, babies shouldn't be on there. You can just put them on formula now and that'll make it easier for you.
It's always convenience. Like, it's always sold on convenience, isn't it?
Absolutely. And yet there's nothing more convenient than being able to just pop your baby on and have them feed. You don't have to wash bottles. You don't have to clean anything up. You don't have to be forking out money for it.
Because I don't know, because I'm not a woman. Well, I could identify as one, I guess, even during this conversation, but I won't. But what's it? There must be, okay, it's hard work. I can see that for the mother. But there must be something beneficial beyond just knowing that your kid's getting the right, you know, nutrition, feed and all that, and we're bonding and everything, there must be some sort of payback for the mother somewhere.
I think it's just that connection and bonding. It does increase your oxytocin levels, which is your feel-good hormone. Oxytocin is called the love hormone, is kind of how it's known.
Yeah.
So oxytocin levels do rise with that. There is some research showing that it can help mitigate sort of postnatal depression and things like that. There's also some older research showing that it may also be protective against breast cancer. So the longer you feed, there's some benefits there as well, particularly for those who feed for over a year. But I haven't looked at that research for a while, so I need to refresh that. But it is out there. So there are definitely benefits for mum. And just in terms of that connection, you know, it's so important that we have good connections with our babies. And breast milk obviously is a big part of that in breastfeeding. So,
what can men do to make it easier for women who are breastfeeding? Men, you're listening? Come on.
Feed the mum.
Feed the mum. Yeah.
Do some housework, you know. Especially in those early days where they're trying to get things established, you know, take some of the burden off mum, get some food into her. That's really the big thing, and make sure she's always got a full water bottle because she is going to need it.
Right.
It's really thirsty work.
And also, actually,
just if men could take an interest, because often, you know, it gets really late at night and baby might be feeding and they can't latch properly, there might be something going on. Sometimes it's actually the dad who's the one who can kind of be out of that immediate situation and say, hey, why don't you try holding baby a different way? Hey, why don't you try this?
Right.
You know, like, it's maybe I can hold them for a little bit while you go and have a glass of water and go to the loo or something. Like, there's a lot that men can do to support. But I think the biggest thing is to actually just encourage the woman and just say, you can do this. You know, yes, it's hard right now, but just keep going and take that bottle temptation away.
If you're a dad, you should be saying that.
Yeah.
That's what you need to want, because look at the benefit you get in.
Yeah, it's massive. And there's heaps of other ways. You don't have to feed a baby to bond with a baby, because that's kind of where a lot of dads will come in. Oh, just let me feed them. You know, then I can bond too.
Oh, I see. There's a perception that you can't bond without the feeding.
There's a lot of that. But there's obviously a lot you can do. You know, you can be in charge of baby, of, you know, bathing baby or rocking baby to sleep.
Changing
or playing,
all the nappies.
You know, like, there's so much you can do.
Okay, well, now if people, there'll be people listening, maybe grandmas and mothers who've got their daughters, granddaughters coming up, maybe pregnant now, just about to have a baby. If there are any questions or concerns or anything, rather than go to social media and go for the first thing you see, what do you suggest? Where do you suggest people go?
So midwives are a good start, assuming that the midwife is well trained in it, which they should be. You've got lactation consultants. They're really, really amazing. We've got a lot of very, very good ones around. La Leche League is another option.
Is that a good place to start?
It certainly can be. They'll usually have really, really good training. It's nice. The thing with the La Leche League that I like is that it's very mother to mother. So there's the leaders will have done really good training around breastfeeding. They're really good at supporting, but they're all mothers as well themselves. And there's a lot of, if you get together with a meeting, you can go and actually talk to other mums who are in the same boat as you. And
you might meet some new people.
Hey, it's worked for me. Why don't you try this? You know, there's a lot of value in that. And it's kind of that, I guess, that connection that we're kind of missing in a lot of ways in our society today. So La Leche League can be fantastic as well. And there's often, if you look around online, you'll often find there's other sort of breastfeeding groups that are not La Leche League, kind of independent ones around as well. But that information should be out there, you know, online or through your midwife, through Plunkett should be able to help as well with referrals. So there's lots of places, in theory. It's just accessing them.
All right. Well, really interesting to chat with you, Erin Evis. Have we missed anything? Is there any last thing you want to say, point you want to make?
I don't think so. Just that breastfeeding, you know, breast milk is just such an amazing substance, and it's so much more than nutrition. I think people don't don't really realize how much it orchestrates the immune system, and even how much it changes, you know, according to baby's needs, even from morning to evening or morning to nighttime.
Is it all done through hormones or sort of like chemical signaling?
It's all hormonally. I mean, if you want, for example, they've seen, you know, there's hardly any melatonin, which is our sleep hormone, in milk produced during the day, but, you know, at midnight is really high levels of it to help baby establish that routine. That content varies through the day. You know, hormone levels is so much. It's so much more than just food. And I think that's the point that really needs to be driven home, because that's what people need to know. And that's what doesn't get brought into the conversation often enough.
Really cool. Erin, thanks for coming on RCR and talking about the benefits and importance of breast milk for children's health and development. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.